Minnesota Reads on KUMD is supported in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. Linda Lagarde Grover joins us this morning on the phone. So glad to have her along with us to talk about her latest book called In the Night of Memory. And I haven't finished it, so I don't know whether it's going to continue in this vein, but right now it is absolutely breaking my heart. Hey, Linda, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us.
Good morning, Lisa. Thanks for calling me.
The book deals with a couple of bigger topics. It's a novel, and it deals with a couple of bigger topics that are kind of, you know, they're seamlessly woven into the narrative. If you weren't kind of paying attention to the news, you maybe wouldn't know that there is controversy right now about the Indian Child Welfare Act and whether or not it's a good idea to continue with that. Let's just talk about that a little bit. The Indian Child Welfare Act is the idea that Native kids should stay in their Native communities with relatives instead of being placed, in many instances, with non-Native families. Is that an accurate summing up, Linda?
It's I think it is accurate. What it does is place the authority for this on the tribes of the children and their families, and so. The individual tribes and reservation governments then make the decision about what will happen if children are not able to be at home at that time.
And there was a period of time where the U.S. government said that these kids were not getting a good, they were not being taken care of well, and that in order for them to be taken care of well, and that was by in large part, white standards, not really, dominant culture standards, not really looking at the importance of family and extended family, not looking at the importance of culture. And so the idea was, swoop these kids out of this environment and make them nice middle class white kids, in essence. But that didn't always work well, and that was difficult for a lot of kids. And in addition, families suffered kind of like, after the boarding school era, it's like they were suffering a second wave of loss.
Yes, I think that it's all linked. I think that the placement of children away from their homes and families was a continuation of the assimilation policy, of the policies of the earlier 20th century. And, certainly these policies under actually federal termination policy, which was the termination of tribes, was something that was viewed, I think, by policymakers as a really good way to deal with all kinds of problems that they felt were created by Native people just being here. And so, this book, partway through this book, we see that the Indian Child Welfare Act is referred to by the fictional tribe of the two girls in the story, and then the county then just returns the girls to the family that requested her. So there wasn't a big splashy court fight or anything.
No, it's just they're taken. Now the previous foster homes that the girls are in kind of follow a narrative that at this point that you see in a lot of other books, not all other fiction, but there were very familiar characters in fiction where you've got the really ick foster home situation, of course. And this is a way of course, setting these characters up and so that something different, of course, is going to happen to them in their situation or it is necessary to give them a rich backstory. Did you feel like you needed to do a lot of additional research into the foster system and perhaps even into the Indian Child Welfare Act and how that plays out in our neck of the woods, Linda? Or was this something that maybe you understood from your own experience or from friends or relatives?
I feel that I'm fairly familiar with both. And it's sad to say that I think that you know, many Native people, maybe just about all of us, are familiar with the out-of-home placement and with the Indian Child Welfare Act. But the book is, the Indian Child Welfare Act and removal of the girls from home is one part of the story in this book. And the other part is I wanted to write about a couple of sisters in the foster system, but then as I was doing this, it occurred to me that, you know, these things don't just up and happen. A Native child isn't just all of a sudden plucked away, but that I started to wonder, where's their family and where's their mother? And so that's how the story just kind of grew as far as, you know, Loretta, the mom's own childhood and background and the fact that she's missing. And she's not in the book very much, but her presence is there all the way through. She is one of how many, we don't even know, murdered and missing Native women. And so that is really an important part to this story, too. I mean, the girls are growing up without their mother. Their communities are missing somebody.
And that is the second, you know, area. There's been a lot more conversation about the topic of missing and murdered Indigenous women. Whether or not all of the conversation and the buzz is going to be able to actually translate into movement and into substantive societal change is kind of still up in the air. But her presence, Loretta's presence for her daughters, Loretta's presence or absence for her family, you have more of a sense of, instead of, you know, oh, somebody's gone, and then nobody really thinks about them again. You have she, as you say, is very much there. Her absence is very much there. One of the things that was interesting is, as we're establishing a little bit about Loretta at the beginning, there's conversation about how she spends a lot of time going back and forth between Native communities in the cities and her home reservation. And so nobody, there's even a line about how nobody really knows where she is all the time. Is that part of what makes it so difficult sometimes to know when someone is missing, because people maybe are not checking in constantly? I think for a lot of people, they're like, well, how could somebody just go missing? I mean, don't you talk to them on the phone every day or fill in the blank?
Loretta's life was a really difficult one. And in the story, there's quite a bit included about her background, but not only hers, but the whole reservation community's background. And, you know, that history is always with us, and that we really need to look to the history to understand. Yeah, it sounds like, well, what do you mean nobody knew she was missing? But if you think about many people, you know, outside of Indian country too, are not necessarily checking in with each other all the time. And so it's like, well, she was really on her own, and she just hadn't been seen in a while. And so nobody was really aware of this. Nobody knew that she was going to be parting from her children. And then the children had to be tracked down then, because they were in effect missing, though of course they were within the foster system, and so
there was a paper trail for them at least. But
yeah.
But it was more a situation where Loretta was alone, and
had a very, very difficult life. Yes.
And so when she was seen in the cities, it was, you know, oh yeah, I saw her. It wasn't, of course, she came and stayed with me because she always stays with me, or we had lunch together that day, or fill in the blank. It was whether or not you had seen her, which is a really impersonal kind of thing, whether she had been seen on her home reservation or whether she had been seen in a community with the cities. And people, so many times, it sounds like, are operating in such a terrible state of aloneness.
She was by herself. It was she had a as I said, a very difficult life and difficult situation, and a history, I mean, her own personal history was a very hard one. But at the same time, it's sad to say it's not unheard of. It's very sad, but the history of federal policy and what it actually meant when it was when it's been implemented is, I guess, it truly, as you say, can be heartbreaking.
And the opportunity to read a novel, you get sucked in by the characters, and all of a sudden, when you close the book at some point, you realize that you understand something, because, of course, novels give you the opportunity to walk in someone else's shoes and learn about a life that isn't yours. And you can, if you are so inclined, say, wow, look at the things I learned about what this woman went through, and realize that even though the story is fiction, the circumstances of her life are not.
Yes, absolutely. And, you know, in every every missing Native woman has her own story. You know, it's unique to her. But at the same time, there are common threads through these stories. And I guess that's what makes it so sad, is that it's become part of larger society in America. So who knows, you know, maybe, you know, I know that a great deal of attention is on this within American Indian communities, and I think that even though help is needed and greatly appreciated, I think that we are stepping forward as a people ourselves to work out something with this, a resolution, so that we can keep our families and our communities intact.
I haven't finished the book, so I can't, a person's impression of the book is different. And I'm, you know, really wish this radio nonsense wasn't taking up all my time this morning, because I'd rather be sitting with your book and a cup of coffee someplace and finishing it up. But I think one of the things that I did, I think that the way you evaluate a book, of course, has to come at the end when you evaluate the entire book. But one of the things that I love about the book being in the process of is how Minnesota moms and Minnesota women are kind of so much the same, even though they may have a different cultural or a different racial background. They're kind of all the same in a lot of ways.
Well, mothers, you know.
Right.
Right. And that's why I think it's, you know, her absence is so, it has such a, of course it's going to have a profound effect on her girls. And in the book, they actually, years pass, and their lives then, you know, they have to deal with all the other things that people deal with life. So it's not like they are at a standstill and unable to function, though one of the girls is deeply, deeply affected, even broken by this. But just the same, the one sister has to keep things pulled together the best she can and go on and help to make a life that is a good life for both of them. And then that, of course, their connection with their family and with their reservation community too helps to strengthen this, because the girls were kind of like pinball machines,
right?
You know, just ricocheting all over the place, and you know, their lives were not totally miserable, you know, at every second and stuff, but they had things happening to them that were so difficult. But they at the end of the book, you see, you know, things have to be resolved to the best of your ability to do that, and you can live a good life and take difficult things and make them into something that can help and strengthen you in your community.
And as with so many things, sometimes you actually need kind of a pattern. You need to watch someone do it. And if you don't have the opportunity to watch someone in your real life, fictional characters who can overcome challenges and who can struggle and find their way, sometimes that's just the little bit of pattern that you need to try to set yourself on a different path. Linda, thank you so very, very much for joining us this morning. And Linda's newest novel is called In the Night of Memory. Linda Lagarde-Grover also wrote The Road Back to Sweetgrass. And we have some copies of Linda's book that are available for qualifying membership pledgers. So we're going to open that up in just a moment. Linda, I'll say thank you to you once again for joining us. It was always, as always, a great pleasure.
Thank you so much, Lisa. I really appreciate your calling me.
Linda Lagarde-Grover is the author of a book called In the Night of Memory, and Minnesota Reads is produced at KUMD with funding provided in part by the Minnesota Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund.